All right, everyone, how are you? Welcome to this week's episode of our podcast. It's called Is Breakfast Included? Thanks for stopping by. On the show this week, Lisa and I talk with Daniel O'Neill, better known in the touring industry by everyone as Borga. Daniel is a guitar tech and production manager, but even though we did talk to him a little bit about that, we reached out to him because he is starting a podcast called Rockstar Roadie Podcast. It airs February the 6th. He will have different Texas guests. They'll discuss mental health on the road, which is very important. Tell roadie stories, kind of make people mad. I'm really looking forward to it. And I hope he asked me to be a guest, be on it. I'm just throwing that out there. Anyway, we had a lot of fun with Borga. Let's check it out.
All right, man. Tell everyone who you are.
My name is Dan O'Neill, but everybody knows me as Borga.
Borga.
No, that's been my nickname forever.
How'd you get that nickname?
This is a story. So my brother PJ, who is the bass player for Trickster, and understand you live in Jersey, so you'll get it. I'm an Italian Irish from Jersey. When we say brother or sister, it's not always about blood. I mean, there's a tattoo on my hand. You know, there's a tattoo on my hand that said family is not just blood. So PJ and I started out in middle school together, and we have been friends to this day. He's my son's godfather, best man at my first wedding, best man at my second wedding, you know, alongside my son, his godson. So back in the Trickster days when we were at the height and we were having fun, we had our own language. And that language was so the girls had no clue what we were talking about. So Borgis, which I actually think it's a real term. I think we were either drunk or something when we came up with it, but Borgis meant fat. I used to be fat, very fat. And it just turned into Borga after a couple nights on the bus, shit hammered. And that's it. It just kind of, I think it was on the, but I wish I could actually remember. It could have just been when we were out. I don't know, you know, it's just, but that's where it came from. My brother and the guys in the band, they nicknamed me Borga, and then, well, the rest is history. Everybody, even when I production manage a tour, there's always a crew guy who knows me as Borga. I'm like, God damn it. My name's Danny. Right. On this, I'm a production manager. My name is Danny. On guitars, I'm Borga. Because I just did TSO and I had a blast, you know, and Takumi was out there and Takumi's like calling me Borga, but the other guys are calling me Danny. I got the band members calling me Danny. And then other guy, I'm like, wait, it's just call me Borga. Just make it simple while we're out here.
Right. It's the problem with nicknames, you know?
Yeah, pretty much they stick. And then, you know, 40 years later, they're still there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, sorry about that.
That's cool, man. How did you get into this business right off the bat?
So right off the bat, I was in high school. Obviously, I just, you know, told you about PJ from Trickster, who also plays with Fozzy and Rod. He played with Lita Ford. You know, they got signed. You know, PJ was still in high school. My mom was broke. Going through a divorce from my dad. Sorry, I apologize. I got runny nose. And I needed to work. So we got snow in Tennessee. Go figure. But so I was working at a studio where was it? It was in Jersey. It was, you know, because like I told you guys, you're in Jersey City. I was born in Jersey City, then moved to Ridgefield when I was like 11. So I want to say it wasn't Englewood. Ridgewood. I think it was Ridgewood. I was working in a studio and a band was coming in and they're like, you know, help them set up and all this stuff. They really didn't have a crew. They had a monitor engineer who, which is funny, I'm still friends with to this day. And so I'm helping them set up and all this stuff like that, you know, and the guys are showing me how they like their stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm just the studio guy. I get your microphones and clean up the room, you know. But whatever. So like through the first day, the tour manager, I remember him, unfortunately, he's passed away. His name was Scal Lorette. And he came out and he's like, hey, what are you doing for the next like couple months? I'm like, working here. You know, he's like, you want to come on tour with us? I'm like, in the back of my head, if I went, well, what the hell do you mean? It would have been like, you're not like a seasoned guy. You know what I mean? It's just like you sit there. So basically, instantly, I said, sure, why not? You know, I just got to call and check with the family, make sure everything's good. You know, meanwhile, I have to call mommy and say, hey, can I go on tour? And he's like, well, you know, it pays $1,500 a week. And back of my head lit up like a Christmas tree because I was making like a whole whopping $70 a week working at the studio. You know, and here we are, you know, going, my mom's going through a divorce, you know, money's tight, yada, yada. So I call my mother and I said, hey, you know, I got this offer to go out on the road with these guys. And meanwhile, I had been doing stuff with PJ's other band, you know, band before Trickster Prisoner. My buddies were in Hades and my another buddies were in Nonfiction. So I was doing all local work. And so I knew the gist of everything, you know, which was no big deal. And I was, you know, 17 at the time. I had a goatee. No one really asked me for ID. I swear to God, the whole tour, they never asked me for ID, by the way. We went to Canada and everything, and no one asked me for flipping ID. It was hysterical. That's when you could get away with that and do that. But so it turned, you know, so he tells me, yeah, it's $1,500 a week. Well, you know, we'll give you $20 a day per diem. You're going to room with the monitor engineer, yada, yada. I said, okay, well, what do you need me to do? He's like, well, you're going to do all the backline. I'm like, okay. So I said, well, you go to dinner. I said, you guys go. They were, what's that?
Just all of it. Just everything.
just all of it. I'm like, no, shit, I do it anyway, right? You know, for like $20 a show and a case of beer. So what the hell? And so I'm like, all right, you guys go to dinner. I'll let you know as soon as you get back. So I call my mom. I tell her the whole thing. She's like, well, you know, as long as you promise to go back to school and get your GED. I said, I promise. We'll get back to that here in a minute. So actually, I'll tell you right now, I kept my promise. I went back to high school 20 years later and got my GED. So
good for you. That's
awesome. I went and did that because I kept my word. But so anyway, they leave. I go down to the corner gas station and buy like four single, you know, those single notebooks, spiral notebooks that you had in school. Mm-hmm. I buy, and they're out to dinner. So I come back, I'm standing at every guitar player's position. I'm drawing exactly everything. I'm drawing the pedals. I'm drawing the settings, the whole nine yards. I go to the keyboards. I do the same thing. And I remember the drummer's name was Brock Avery. And they had one of the first playback systems. I mean, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. But I wrote down all the settings and everything. And, you know, I had a notebook for each guy. So I was covered. So they came back and I'm like, by the way, what's the band's name? And they're like, oh, it's Modern English. Mm. I'm like, I went, who? I'm this long-haired metal guy.
Yeah.
Going, who? You know, I stopped the world and met with you. And then they started playing. I'm like, oh, it's that damn song I hear on the radio.
Oh, man.
I was listening to Z100 in New York. And all I hear is I stopped the world and met with you. I'm like, God.
Still.
So, yeah, that's how I basically started. So fast forward, we go out on this tour. We're doing, you know, really big venues. And it's sponsored by Maxwell House Coffee and Marlboro Cigarettes. You know, we're all on one bus. The guys are from the UK. They were nice guys, except for the guitar player who I got my revenge at the last show. And, you know, I come home and then PJ calls me. I'm home for like a week and PJ calls me, goes, what are you doing? I said, oh, nothing. He goes, well, we're about to start up and it's about time you're my bass tech again. So I, okay. He goes, you know, let's get on the bus and go do the Scorpions tour. I said, okay. And literally everything else is history.
Yeah. That's how it happens. It happens fast, right?
It used to happen fast.
Yeah.
Now we can get into local crews later.
Yeah.
I need to wrap my head around that whole friggin' train wreck. But yeah, so that back then it happened fast. If the band was signed, the money was there, you were gone. You know, and that's back in the days when, you know, this Bernie tour support, you had all the backing support you needed. So the bands thrived, they flourished.
Yeah.
Now there's no such thing as tour support. You got to figure out where the money's coming from just to actually have a tour sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, wait for those deposits from the promoter and all that stuff like that just to book everything you need.
Yeah. Yeah. I came in on the tail end of what they would call the heyday. But yeah, so I've been in those positions. That's why cats, you know, we stick around long with a band. I always Lisa can attest. I say stick with the devil you know.
100%. 100%. I'm a lifer. You know, I'm a guy who's, if I'm with the band, I'm going to stick it through until it's time to go. And I've been very blessed in my career to see when that time was coming and go. You know, I've seen the writing on the wall. I've been with enough bands to know that, well, you'll be painting garages next week. I'll still be on tour.
Yeah.
So it's time to move on.
Yeah. Yeah. You ever had a nightmare gig?
Yeah. So I was with, this one is interesting as it could be. I've never done a gig like this. So, and I've done some really messed up gigs. So I'm with the All-American Rejects. And this was many years ago. And I think it was Singapore. Yeah, it was Singapore. And we go to set up and we show up to this parking lot. And we think it's, you know, it's an outside show, you know. Okay. No, the show was on top of park of shipping containers in a parking lot. Literally on top of shipping containers that they put together in a parking lot. With a bamboo roof. And it rained. And it blew out my gear. So I'm having to take US power stuff plugged into, you know, Edison US power with whatever we had because they didn't have anything that matched our stuff.
Yeah.
To make the guitar player's rig work, which I finally did it. But if you were to look at it, I would have had OSHA and every electrician on the planet like stab me because it shouldn't have worked, but it did. Like I was triple tapping off of everything in the Furman I could possibly triple tap off of.
Yeah.
And fit a block in there. I'm like, holy crap. I mean, that's just one of many. I mean, you know, back in the day when we were doing Accept, me and my buddy Donnie Floyd were doing Accept. Years. I mean, I think it was like their retirement tour number 2 or 3 or whatever. But we were in Germany and we were playing all the places like that were just, well, I'll say it, shitholes. You know, but there was a couple cool ones too, like the sub factory where they actually made the German war subs, but it's in this cavern.
Yep.
And it's, have you ever done it?
Yeah, I've done the sub
factory. Oh, dude, the sub factory is awesome. I mean, the guy took me downstairs. I'm like, this is cool, but I'm going to die. So we need to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll never see me again. But, you know, when you're trying to, there's no showers. There's a hole in the ground to take a dump. It's like, there's been some nightmare shows. I'm not going to sit there and lie. Then there was one show I did with Slayer in Italy. And I was literally on stage left. I was Kerry's tech. And I was there for quite a long time. I was so sick. The stage manager was giving Kerry his guitars. All I could do was to barely hold myself up, tune the thing, and sit there and lean on my work box, like hitting the patch changes. And I couldn't even like move. And I got a bucket on one side of me to throw up in. I got another bucket on the other side of that to do something else in. 103 fever. Everything went through me. Nothing stayed in me.
Oh,
so, yeah, but you know what? Did the show.
Yeah.
It's what us old bastards do.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
How has the music industry changed for you from when you started to now?
Man, there is so many answers to that question. So I'll narrow it down from a cruise perspective.
Okay.
If you're fortunate to be with a band for a long time, then you still have that interaction. Some of these bands that I've been with for a long time, you could see management come in and try to change that interaction to block you off from the artist. To, you know, when you've got to go through so-and-so to ask about a piece of gear that you need to make the rig work, that's when it's time for me to go. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to talk to the guy who knows his tone to tell me what he wants, to take my advice and to get what he wants so I can build his rig. Because I got the custom shop here and I'm building people's rigs all the time. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to talk to you. Put me on the phone with the guy who's going to be playing this crap and let me talk to him. You know what I mean? So that's one thing that has changed. The other thing that has changed, and I am so sad to say this, but it has to be said. And when we do my podcast, you will notice there is zero filter on me. So I'm being real nice.
No, man, be as honest as you want to be on this.
Bring it on.
The state of people who want to tour nowadays is that of air of arrogance, that of cockiness. And I have gotten more calls to fix their screw ups. They're my godsend, but I feel bad because they're making me a crap ton of money because I'm fixing their stupidity. But management has got to stop hiring the low dollar guys and stick with the guys who know what the hell they're doing. And that's just a sad state of our industry nowadays, because there are these new kids coming in, and bless them for going to these schools that they go to, which teach you nothing. I am almost 60 and I will beat and whoop a 17-year-old's ass loading a truck. Now, I'm going to pay for it the next morning with, you know, Bengay and CBD cream and knee braces, but I will whoop their ass loading a truck any day of the week. Bet me, I'm in. They whine, they complain, they bitch, they piss, they moan. It's like, are you kidding me? I had one kid a couple years ago bitching that he couldn't find the bus stop list. And I threw a loaf of bread at him on the bus and said, shut the fuck up. He goes, whoa, what was that for? I said, dude, do you realize I used to get $20 a day per diem, had to go to the gas station or go into the truck stop, buy what I wanted, write my name all over everything and stick it in the fridge. We didn't get bus stock. We didn't get after show food. That is, be very, very grateful that you get that.
Yeah.
Because there are managements and bands who can go, I don't want to pay for that. Why am I giving them $50 a day, $30, $40, $50 a day per diem to eat plus catering? And then why do I got to buy them after show food? Why do I got to buy them their frou-frou coffee for the bus? Why do I got to buy them their freaking special olives? And shut the fuck up.
Oat milk.
Oat milk. You want your oat milk? You want your almond milk? You know, you want your vanilla flatte flock, whatever the hell it is? Then go to the store and buy it. Be grateful. All of these guys, and I guess the word, I just figured it out because I'm slow sometimes, they're self-entitled.
Yeah.
Where guys like you and me, I'm still grateful. I really am. And I say thank you to management all the time. I say thank you to my tour managers all the time. Even if I'm whatever position I'm in, I say thank you.
Yeah.
These kids, nah. Ungrateful little wretches. Not all of them, but there are some of them.
No, I agree with you. I've been on the road with, I mean, I always say I have not been doing this as long as you or some cats, but I think coming into this, I was always so respectful of my elders or the cats that had been there. And that's how I learned. But I've been on well, you know what I mean. But you know, I've been on the road with cats that you know, we're playing nice arenas and they walk in like it's a shithole. You know, like right. And I'm like, you know, this is, yeah, the load in might have been a bit bumpy or the union guy might have pissed you off, but we're at MSG, man. Like this is a privilege for us to be here. 100%. That's the way I think, you know.
That's history. That's flipping history. You play the Forum in LA. That's history. MSG. That's history. Thank God. Oh God, the Philadelphia Spectrum. That was history, but thank God that's gone. I hated that place. You know, but yeah, you're going to deal with people who are in pissy moods. You're going to deal with all of this crap. Just deal with it, man.
Yeah.
Do your gig. Let the production manager who has to do everything, let the stage manager who has to do and deal with everything and everyone, let them worry about that shit. Your guitars, stay in your world. Your bass, drums, stay in your flipping worlds and shut your pie hole.
Yeah, right.
Be grateful you have a job, because I'm going to tell you right now, there are guys who are almost as good as me, just kidding, that aren't working. They're not working.
Yeah.
They don't have jobs. There are guys during the pandemic who lost their homes and have still not recovered. My wife and I lost everything. We fought tooth and nail, scrimped wherever we could just to keep a roof over mine and my kid's head during the pandemic. And I am grateful that I have work. People are not, they've forgotten how to be grateful.
Yeah, I agree.
What advice would you give to someone new in the industry?
And, go back to school.
Specifically, about maintaining their mental health while they're on the road.
Man, that's a good question. Because obviously I can never answer one of your questions without a lead up story. So prior to the pandemic, I was with the band for a very long time. We're talking 16 plus years. And I unfortunately fell into the trap of being comfortable. Mm. With being comfortable comes compliance. You take what's given to you. In other words, and it's not with just that band. It's with a lot of bands. There was a period of my life, probably the last 10 years, up until the pandemic. Let's preface it that at the pandemic, my life changed, and we can get into that. But prior to the pandemic, for about 10 years, I literally was a whipping boy. I lost my give a shits. I know I had a family. I know I had to feed the family. I know I had to support the family. So I just took whatever was thrown at me, and I took the shit that came with it. I became complicit. You know, my mental health slowly deteriorated. I basically let people shit on me. And I took it. Why? Because I had to put food on a table. I had to keep a roof over the head. That was more important to me. It's the one thing my mom and dad taught me, you know, and they're not here anymore, but they taught me to always take care of the family. And that was my biggest thing, was taking care of the family. And you're from Jersey, so it's an Italian-Irish thing. You've got to take care of the family, no matter what. But my mental health suffered. And I don't know really the best advice I can give people, but if I look back on it now, being the state of mind I'm in now, it ain't worth it. The job isn't worth it. You've got to listen. We're going to have problems at home when we're on the road. We're going to miss graduations. We're going to miss weddings. We're going to miss a whole lot of shit. Birthdays, you name it, we're going to miss it. Holidays, we're going to miss it. This is the first time. This past December was the first time in my entire, or no, sorry, second time. First time was with Cyndi Lauper when we got stuck in Japan, but I missed Christmas. I missed Christmas with my family for the first time since my children have been born. And it bummed me out, but I knew what I was doing by providing for the family was the right thing to do. If you're going to go into this career, into this job, and I don't look at it as a job anymore, I look at it as my career. I'm proud of what I've done. I'm proud of the things I've built. I'm proud of the shows I've put on. I am proud every night when I watch a child in the audience smile and have a good time. To me, that's a successful show. I don't care if the show is shitty. As long as that kid is having fun or that person is having fun. You know, Rob Thomas, I was with Rob for a very long time. And Rob used to say something every night because he meant it. But the first night he said it, it stuck with me. And what he mean is, what he said was, he is there to facilitate, he is the facilitator of their good time. People work hard, deal with a lot of bullshit outside of the venue doors. Everything going on, and I don't talk politics or religion, but you know what I'm talking about. The crap going on. Everything. They spend their hard-earned money when the economy sucks to pay for tickets, to pay for parking, to probably pay for babysitters, to pay for dinner. He is there just to give them 2 hours to forget about all that shit. So when the way I go into doing a show, just like I just did with TSO, is I wanted to make sure everything was perfect for Al Petrelli, who I'm his tech, that he could play a good show and give those people who spent their hard-earned money to have a great night and to walk away smiling, feeling good with their families. That was what I started to realize, and I guess this maybe will answer your question from me on the advice I can give, enjoy what you do. Don't make it your obsession. And a lot of these guys obsess because the money is good. Let's be clear, Bernie, you and I both noticed the money is good when we get that gig and we're doing one guitar player with six guitars and we're making, you know, yada, yada a week. I'm laughing my ass off going, man, I get paid to do this. This is cool, you know? And then you get that extra per diem per day, which goes on top of it, you know? So the money can be a trap when you've got to realize that it is your choice to be there or not be there. If you're miserable and your mental health is suffering, leave.
Yeah.
It is time to go when that happens. So I guess that kind of answered your question. I have no clue because, man, I ramble.
Man, let's talk about the Rockstar Roadie podcast. What I know I saw the day that you posted. By the way, Lisa has the same mic you do. Hers is just black.
I know I wanted the black one, but I'm getting the black one from Ryan to take with me on the road so I could do when I'm on the road, I could do the podcast on the road.
So I saw when you got that and you're like, I'm going to do this. So when I saw last week when you said, hey, it's happening, I mean, what inspired you to do it?
Death. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Like I said, I told you earlier, you know, I guess before we started recording, I lost a lot of friends. I've lost a lot of friends to issues. So there are things that I will get into on the podcast that I am okay with.
Uh-huh.
There are some things I'm not okay with, but there are things where I'm going to open up because I honestly feel that in our society, people look at men as they have to be tough. They look at men, they have to be tough. And some guys feel if they open up, they feel emasculated. I am okay with feeling emasculated because I'm married to a hot woman. I got amazing children. I'm pretty damn stellar looking for my age. And I'm very happy in my life. But I feel people need to hear what? Yeah. Dude, I lost 100 pounds, 125 total during the pandemic. So
wow.
Diabetes, hyperthyroidism, and you know, that'll do that to you. Yeah. But so anyway, I'm okay with opening up. I'm the guy who cries at pet adoption commercials. I'm the guy who will tear up seeing a dog being rescued. I love my dogs. We're empty nesters now. So all I've got is my dogs and, you know, but what really, you go back to your question is what really was the catalyst for the podcast. And it's been in my mind since I got that microphone from Ryan, and which I wanted to do it then. I wasn't ready. I've been in therapy. I've had the same therapist now since mid pandemic. But I wanted to do it because I think our industry, and I think a lot of industries, men, everyone kind of skirts around subjects and everyone kind of talks in, I don't know, what do you call it when you're kind of, third party, they're kind of talking in third party and all that crap. Listen, for me, it's real, it's raw, and it's unfucking filtered. I'm sorry if you like it. If you don't like it, I don't care. But I'm not here to sugarcoat. I raised my children being honest with them. And my children are awesome. My 18-year-old is out on her own, and she's thriving. So I obviously did something right. You know, and I've never bullshitted or sugarcoated anything with anybody, especially a band member or another crew guy. I'm straight up with them all the time. Uh-huh. So I figured it was time, due to losing so many friends in my life by their own hand or by not, that it was time to talk about stuff and let people know it's okay to open up. But it's also okay to know that someone else is going through something you might be going through so you can relate to me.
Yeah,
sure. Definitely.
Relate, being able to relate to someone lets you open up a little bit better, even if it's for a good cry, even if it's for a good yell, or if it's to just listen. I'm always there to listen to people and offer my advice because I've been through some serious bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, and I was the first one to say no to therapy. And then, and I'll tell this story because I'm going to have my brother, he doesn't know it yet, but he's going to be on the podcast. He doesn't know yet, but that son of a bitch owes me several thousand. But he's the one who got me to go to therapy. Him and my buddy Andrew Crow. Andrew Crow was our PM for Rob Thomas for a long time. He's also a brother, Mason. And he got those two. PJ really got me going to therapy because I was in LA. He was in LA at the same time. So we went to our favorite spot, the Rainbow, to have dinner. And with him, I can always open up. He's my family. And I kind of laid it all on the table about what I was going through and how dark the place I went to was. And he suggested therapy. And that's when it kind of hit me hearing it from my brother, someone I trust literally with my life and the life of my family, to go, okay, maybe I need to look into this. And then I was talking to my buddy Crow, and he said the same thing. And I was embarrassed to go, but those two made me not feel embarrassed anymore. Because it was okay to talk to someone who doesn't have an opinion in my life. They're just there to listen. I don't want to be your therapist. I don't want to be anybody's therapist. But I think people need to be able to hear that there are people going through shit that want to live. You know, I don't know if you could see it. It's hard. But right behind me is a picture. And that picture is a drawing I found online. And it's all the faces of Robin Williams from all of his movies. It's hand-drawn. Somebody did it. I don't know who did it. I'm actually trying to find it so I can get it blown up and put a big one on my wall. But Robin Williams, unfortunately, lost his battle to the demons. But at the same time, he tried to help people. With him, every movie he ever did, I want to say it was part of his contract was they had to hire and pay 10 homeless people to work on the movie set. That was like, he wanted to help people. He lived his life trying to help people, trying to make people laugh. And I do the same thing. I'll do stupid shit and make myself embarrassed just to make someone laugh and have a moment. But a lot of people, I got to be tough. They got a big, strong man, butt stick. No, that's not
that what facade we do. That you feel like you have to put on.
Yeah, especially on the road. You cannot be sensitive on the road, Bernie. You know this, or else you're weak. Bullshit. Kiss my ass. I am who I am. You know, and other people know that it's okay to be like that. They need to be okay.
Yeah.
Because too many people are taking their own lives. And what really hit me was I got, and I don't know the person, but I heard about a crew guy who took his own life during the pandemic. But the way he did it really freaked me out in my head, because I'm really hoping it's not true, but I've never heard it wasn't. What he did was he wrote a letter to his wife and his children, packed up all his stuff in totes, and left the totes with a note on each tote, and took his life. Nobody should have to go through that.
Yeah.
Nobody.
I remember that.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody should have to go through that. You know what I mean?
I was going to say, have you noticed any common mental health challenges among people in the music industry, roadies and techs?
Depression. Depression is huge. You know, it's funny. And you see it amongst road crew all the time. They're depressed. They're not going to admit it, but I could tell the signs, because you could tell the signs on me. I become very quiet. I become very lethargic. I just kind of keep to myself in my guitar world or in my production office, whatever. There are people who truly suffer from depression. Okay. And my therapist taught me this. I deal with depression. I'll have a bout for a day. It'll go away. You know, I'll have a day where I get in my head. I miss my mom. I miss my dad. I miss I miss my friends. You know, because I can look at my phone and look back at the text and look at the last text I sent to him, you know, and it was days before they died. To have that I still can't delete people's number out of my phone. I mean, hell, I still got my mom's number in my phone. But depression, I honestly believe, because A, you're away from home. You miss things. You missed your loved ones. You know, it does weigh on you after time. First couple weeks on tour, you're like, woo, yeah, I ain't got to take out the garbage. I ain't got to cook. Freaking yeah. Then you're like, shit, man, I want to take out the garbage. I want to cook. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think depression is one of the biggest things.
Sure.
And I'm always there to listen, you know, because there's people, you know, I have no problem saying this. I was having a bad day one day. And my guitar player, Al Petrelli, and Al and I go back 30 years. You know, we're both East Coast guys. You know, I'm Jersey. He's Staten. He was Long Island. So he looked at me, he goes, you okay? I said, I'll talk to you about it later. And it was over my daughter. You know, she had just told me she was going to move out and yada, yada. And daddy's little girl, you know, she's literally my mini me. You know, I was having a tough day dealing with it. So him and I talked, and then I was okay. But I had someone to talk to. Because why? Because he listened.
Yeah.
He didn't, you know, he's got a little one at home. You know, he's got grown kids. But he's got a little one at home that's like, to me, is his princess. So he understood. He can relate. I can't have that conversation with another crew person who doesn't have kids because they can't relate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, no, so, I get it. You know, but before the pandemic, Danny, mental health, having the blues, being depressed, all that was very taboo with us. People didn't talk about it. Couldn't go to someone and go like, man, like, now it's very open, and a lot of crew guys are very open to it. And some tours, you know, they have a mental health professional on tour when there's the money, there's the budget. But like, what are some strategies that you've used to maintain like a healthy, you know, mentality, you know, when you're feeling down? When you're a PM, would you organize like a group of people, or do you just know, like, hey, I can talk to this person, you call home?
Yeah. How did you manage your stress?
Yeah. Puppy days. When I'm a PM, we do puppy days. I'll call, you know, myself or, you know, someone, the local promoter. Oh my God. You give me a dog for 10 minutes, I'm the happiest guy in the world. Man, but no, we do puppy days. So basically myself, my production assistant, production coordinator. Can't call them that anymore. And my production coordinator has been with me forever. You know, unfortunately, she's retiring. So I actually have a new one that I'll be using when I go out and do production. But, or the promoter rep will call a local shelter and ask them, hey, listen, we'll do a donation and we'll get you up on the artist socials or whatever. Bring down some dogs, let them associate with humans. And they love it. The shelters love that. It gets them some recognition. It gets people for their cause, but it also gets the dogs to interact with humans. Dogs, cats, hell, we had one. I have a picture of it somewhere. They brought a pig.
That's a fantastic idea. That's it really so good. Is.
A lot of bands do it. I know. I believe the Shinedown guys do it. And you know, my podcast, Hoogie, the bass tech for Shinedown, dear friend. I love the Shinedown crew. They're all great friends of mine. You know, Drew Frappe. And then Ricky Sanders, who's the drum tech, and I have toured together for a long time. They're great guys. They have puppy days. You know, we had it. We had, what was it, on TSO? We actually had Santa Claus come in, but they brought two llamas, which was awesome. And there's a picture of me and Takumi and a bunch of us. I'll have to find it and send it to you, Bernie, but there's a picture of us with the llamas and Santa, you know, and it's doing little fun things like on TSO. You know, it's kind of the holiday. You kind of get a little bit bluesy from being away from home. You miss Thanksgiving. You miss Christmas. You know, you're flying home on New Year's Eve. You know, you kind of just do things to have fun. And you know, you do a lot of breaking of the balls, which is, you know, us East Coasters, we do it really well. But Annie, our production.
I torture Annie, my drum tech.
Oh, my God. It's so much fun, right? Much fun just to break, especially if you've got the accent from home. Yeah. It just makes it more fun. And it's funny is I lost my accent over the years, but being out with Petrelli for like, and a couple of the other crew for TSO, they're all New Yorkers. So my accent, my wife's like, what the hell happened? I went, what? She goes, your accent's back. And I went, yeah, well, you know, I'm out with a bunch of us. So, but you choose to have fun in some way out there. The biggest problem is I noticed for me, and I will not speak about anybody else, but it's the days off when you're alone. You get inside your head.
Yeah.
Something hit me probably halfway through the TSO tour, which really pushed the podcast for me in overdrive. And I noticed when I'm on the road, I have a purpose. I have a purpose. I set up, sound check, do two shows, break it all down, go to the bus, eat my salad, go to bed, right? That's my day. Bernie, you know this. You have a purpose. Every day you have something to do. What are you doing on your day off? Well, I'm going to go get some food. I'm going to go get some Indian. You have a purpose. At home, you ain't got no purpose. You get lost in your head. Start wondering, start pondering those moments of life. What about this? For me, I can only speak about me. I can't speak about you guys. I can't speak about any other crew guy, what they're going through. But for me, it's, I'm an empty nester now. I don't have my daughter or my son running around the house. You know, it's, what is my purpose now that my children are grown?
Yeah.
You know, what is my purpose now? Well, I took up cooking. I've always loved to cook. I bought the Hexclad pots because I wanted them and because I've been cooking ever since I got home and I love it. But you have to find a purpose. You know, it's just like, I forget that movie. Boy, maybe you remember. What the hell was it? I found my, oh, The Jerk.
Oh,
she touched my special purpose. Well, you have to find your freaking purpose. But the problem is some guys can't. They get lost.
Yeah.
I was lost for a very long freaking time. And I'm not ashamed of it. I don't feel emasculated by it. I'm not embarrassed about it. If you're going to sit there and tell me you're better than me because of it, kiss my ass. Because I don't care who you are. I had an argument. I don't want to say it's an argument when it's online, but you know, when I posted about the podcast, a friend of mine chimed in about something and I forget how the conversation went. And he goes, well, what if an artist asks you to do this? I said, well, 9 times out of 10, the first time I meet someone I work for, they're always going to have a line. Let me ask you a question. Always, right, Bernie?
Yep.
They're always going to say, let me ask you a question. Well, why are you going to ask me a question to ask me a question? Number one. But I always retort back, well, hang on a second. Let me ask you a question. And they're always like, whoa, what the hell is he stopping me for? And I ask them, do you want the answer you pay me for, or do you want the truth? Because if you want the one you pay me for, please hire somebody else.
Yeah.
I am not an ass kisser. I am not your yes man. And I have said it to many artists, and I'm still with some of those artists today.
Yeah. I think I've been this to Lisa. When my guy, he'll ask me something, and I always say, are we talking as friends or are we talking as boss and employee?
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And a lot of guys cannot find that line. They do not know, okay, it's a show day. Well, guess what? That's the boss. But boss texts me on a day off. That's my friend.
Yeah.
The days are long gone for me of the days of like Trickster. We're all brothers. We're all in it together. We all hung out on a daily basis. We all goofed around together, did stupid shit together. Those days are long gone. Now it's a business and you have to deal with business and you can't cross the line. There you have it.
How do you, go ahead. Go ahead.
No.
I was just going to say
that that's really a good way to like have respect with the person. Just understand that, you know, the way
you have to, set the boundary or else what's going to happen. You become a whipping boy. End of discussion. I can't and won't say the name of the artist I said it to recently. But now, the first day I met him, we've now have the boundary set and we get along just fine.
Yeah.
So if you don't set your boundary, and to me, that question is my boundary. It's that simple. That's my boundary. Respect it.
How long did it take you to start setting that boundary?
Funniest thing is, like I said, I used to set it a long time ago. Then, like I told you, something happened and I became the whipping boy.
Yeah.
Then the pandemic hit. So the pandemic hit, I took ill. I had to have surgery. I have all new teeth because of it. That's one of the things I won't get into, but it was an illness. Then I was healing from that. I was getting really good. I was at the point where everything was okay. And then I almost lost my right foot. And I got out of bed one day, man, my foot hurt really bad. Made no sense. Went to the doctor. There was a red spot. So you have, you know, on your foot, you have that pinky toe and then you got that useless, stupid toe right next to it, which I don't know what the hell it does. I can't even wiggle it, but I had an infection in the webbing right between it. Little crack, dry skin, little crack, got an infection. So my doctor didn't see the crack. So she automatically, and actually her misdiagnosis saved my foot. So she diagnosed me with, what's that foot thing? Gout, right? Yeah. So for gout, you get a shot of a steroid, prednisone. You get a shot. So she gave me a shot of prednisone. Within 24 hours, my foot ballooned up. And I have pictures, so one day I might share them with you. But it ballooned up, and then a dot appeared, maybe half the size of a dime, appeared between those two toes. I took a picture of it, texted to her. She goes, call you in 5 minutes. She called me back 5 minutes later. She's like, get to Williamson Medical Center. They have a room waiting for you, and the podiatrist, foot surgeon, will be in to see you as soon as you get there. Get there, yada, yada. Turns out I had diabetic cellulitis, and it was an infection that was creeping towards my foot bone. And if it would have reached the bone, they would have had to take my foot. Now, keep in mind, I did not know I was a diabetic.
Oh, that was your first time.
That was my first time finding out in a hospital bed, which, by the way, my wife said I was not a good patient, but I don't remember anything. I was completely cuckoo. But they took my A1C. What's that?
We know a few of those.
Yeah. My A1C was 13.9.
Oh,
God.
A human's A1C should be 5 to 6.
Yeah.
So needless to say, it was bad. So they had me in the hospital. Yeah. And my foot was getting worse. It was, I mean, it went from that little half dime to a big black spot with a white spot in the middle. I thought I got a spider bite or something. I don't know. It looked like a spider bite, you know, like one of them weird ones. And so they take me in. I don't remember being drugged, but I was out cold, woke up, and my foot was fixed, you know? Then I have to start seeing diabetic doctor. What is it called? An endocrinologist. I see her now once every 3 months. My A1C is down to 6. Diabetes is totally under control. I wear a, Dexcom sensor, and I live by that. But I forgot where we were going with this and where it started because it happens with me. But where do we start? What was the question you asked me?
I think I forgot the question I asked you.
But anyway, so I don't remember. But yeah, so I think I remember. Hang on. No, I don't remember. But
it's okay. We don't either, so it's fine.
Oh crap, I don't remember. These are notes I got to take from my podcast. Write down the questions. Yeah. but yeah, so it was life changing.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I remember. So I had to change my life. So I remember now, I got it. So it was where I the respect line. Okay. Mm. So I went, when I kind of sat for about 2 weeks and I went, roadies wear black. And I always say I went to this place blacker than black. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, Satan would have been scared of the shit that I was going through in my head. If I would have lost my foot, my career was over. What am I going to do from there? Yada, yada. Needless to say, I reached out to Music Health Alliance. My buddy Keith Hoagland, who is Slash's LD now. At the time, he was with another artist who he's not with anymore. But his wife, Colleen Hoagland, was part of Music Health Alliance. I had no insurance. None. So I had just gone through a major, major medical thing prior to this, then I go through the foot thing. A little bit of time passes. I'm in my head deep. I got bill collectors calling. I got bills showing up in the mail. I mean, bill collectors calling on a daily basis. And we're in a pandemic. I got no money. government was no, you know, help for us, yada yada. But so I'm, my head has just gone to this deep dark well of, well, and I'll just put it this way. I was worth more to my family dead than I was alive.
Wow.
Plain and simple. So I didn't, obviously I'm here, I didn't do it, but you know, that's part of your thinking when you're not thinking right. So I reached out, Music Health Alliance helped me get, helped me get insurance, which was great. I found a great therapist and the rest is history. So literally probably prior to me doing Jovi in 2022, I got my balls back. Yeah. I'm going to put it in a very nice way. You know, I got my balls back.
Yeah.
You know, I found my manhood, as Adam Sandler would say. And I was just like, you know what? This job almost killed me. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. And that's when I set the respect line. I set the boundary line of, listen, I'm going to bust my ass for you, but you're not going to treat me like a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Which I have watched artists, and some of them have done it to me, treating me like shit.
Yeah.
Spit on you, throw shit at you, whatever. You know? Thanks. And I've gone back at people and told them to go fuck themselves. And I still was working for them, but yeah, they were nicer to me. But you have to set the boundary. Yeah. If you don't, you're just, as Mel Brooks would say, you're just a piss boy.
What's the response from other cats like us, you know, like other roadies been like, how many people have reached out to you and said, I want to talk to you on your podcast?
Holy crap, dude. Shocked the shit out of me. So I put up the Facebook page thinking, you know, a couple of my friends will join. We're at over 400 right now.
Right on.
In less than 3 days. I have gotten, and I'm looking at it here, emails from people wanting to talk, you know? And I'm like, I have a list of cats in order that I want to be on the podcast because of what I know they can do and the stories I know they can tell. Yeah. And I know I've started mapping out my episodes to go, well, this episode is going to be a hard mental health episode, so I want to talk to so-and-so, you know? So it's like, I have gotten, I mean, I had to set up the email address. I had to set up the Facebook, and I'm really glad I did because the response has been unbelievable. Even from non-roadie people going, we need to hear these stories. We need to, you know, bring light. It needs to be discussed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, and I hate to say this, please don't take this the wrong way as I blow my nose. Okay. God dang it. Anytime someone commits suicide, a celebrity, it's all you hear about. Celebrity dies of natural causes, all you ever hear about. What about us? We work for those sons of bitches. My buddy Jimmy Johnson, God rest his soul, guitar tech for Tommy Shaw for years, Styx, passed away in his hotel room. Nothing.
Yeah.
My buddy Viggy, who I've known since we were 15 years old back in Jersey, died in a car crash.
Nothing. No.
Larry Malero, Todd Confessori, the list literally will blow your mind.
You know?
Nothing. We are nothing to so many people. We are the men in black who nobody ever sees. Well, you know what? I'm tired of that shit. We exist.
Yeah.
That's it. And people agree. And that makes me overwhelmed now that I have to have this standard. That's why I chose to do a live podcast instead of a pre-recorded, because number one, I don't know how to edit worth a shit. Don't even ask me. I could barely run this podcaster thingy right here. You know what I mean? I don't even know what the hell I'm doing, but I'm working on it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do live because I wanted it to be real, raw, and unfiltered.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be true to itself. If it goes over an hour, it goes over an hour. Let people talk. You never know that one of my guests is going through shit and might just need to talk.
Yeah. Might just need to get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that. Bring it on.
Yeah.
So.
Well, brother, I'm excited to hear it. You know, maybe I'm on that list somewhere. I don't know.
Oh, you are. I return favors.
Anyway.
Lisa, I got to ask, Lisa, what do you do? I'm sorry.
I work for a company. I do quality assurance for an internet company.
Okay, right on.
That's fix websites. It's really boring. And then I do this podcast.
No,
which
this is awesome.
The fun part. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we started this March of 21, and unlike you, we were very unprepared.
I'm unprepared, brother. Trust me, I don't know what I'm doing.
We did an episode, released it, and we're like, "Oh shit, we got to do another one now." but we've managed to put out what number are we at?
150.
Well, 150 episodes. Shnikes. We put out one a week.
Yeah.
Lisa does all the socials. She gets it all ready. She posts it. She gets all the, and
you bring in all the guests.
Hey, Lisa, can I hire you?
Maybe.
I don't know what I don't know what I'm doing. I really don't.
My rate is very low.
Mine too.
She'll keep you on your toes, Borga.
Yeah, you might not like some of the feedback.
I don't care. Feedback is, listen, as Gene Simmons used to say, even bad press is good press.
Right.
I don't care.
Totally.
You know, I'm just trying to be real, which in a world of fake people, I'd rather be real.
Yeah. Oh, man. Ain't that the truth?
And you know what? If it ostracizes me, I don't give a shit.
I always say, I don't care if you like me. I like me.
Listen, I don't care if you like me. As long as my wife sleeps with me, I don't care. Don't care. She's the one I got to answer to. She's the boss.
Yeah.
There you go.
Right on,
happy
man.
Wife. Good wife. Happy life.
Yeah, right.
Good way to put things.
Yeah, buddy.
Our podcast is called Is Breakfast Included? Sure.
Yes. As we ask at hotels all the time.
Exactly. And if we were having breakfast, Borga, what would you have?
Oof. I don't know, man. That's I'm not really a breakfast eater, but when I do, I go all in. So probably some biscuits and gravy with some extra sausage in the gravy and some French toast.
Right on. Where? How close to Nashville are you?
We live about 50 minutes away.
Okay.
Yeah, we used to live up there, and I was within 20 of Nashville, and I was like, yeah, we're out of here.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare now.
There's a lot of good breakfast places out where you are.
So. Oh, God, yeah. Mom and pop places? Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
But I cook. Goodlettsville, so. Called
Lynn's, I think. Lynn's in Goodlettsville?
Oh, no. Goodlettsville is completely opposite from me. That's like an hour and a half away from me. I am south.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm south in Spring Hill, Columbia.
Right on, man.
Yeah, so we're looking at, we're talking about moving now that we're empty nesters. We don't need the big house with five bedrooms anymore because all the kids are gone.
Yeah.
So we're talking about downsizing here over the next few months. We're waiting to see what my tour schedule for this year is going to be.
Cool.
You know, cool. So we'll see what happens. So who knows? I mean, at this point in time, the housing market, I might as well just stay here because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I'm too old to want to buy a house again. So I'm going to rent the house.
Yeah.
Because I'm not taking another. I'm not going to live another 30 yeah. years to pay off another house.
Right. Come back to Jersey City.
Yeah. I'm telling you, when I was going through my first divorce, before I met the current wife, I pondered moving back to Jersey. I mean, my family's there, and my family, I mean, friends, most of my family, the remaining alive family live up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, but my friends were from Jersey. My favorite delis were in Jersey. My favorite friggin' Italian bakeries are in Jersey. I looked and I'm like, I can't afford a 5x5 patch of grass in Jersey in a non-crack neighborhood, let alone a house for me and my children. Mike, I can't do it.
It's hard.
It's like, wow. You know, and I, back then Jersey City wasn't as nice as it is now.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm just sure the rent. It's funny. I lived on Montgomery Street and I got to find, cause I think the building is actually still there. My mom and dad, we had the whole apartment on the entire top floor of a building. It was enormously badass. And I used to throw my Legos out the window at the UPS trucks. My mom used to yell at me all the time. But it was right there on the corner, and there was a diner across the street. We lived right above a candy store, and then later it turned into like a trading card store. But it was right there on the corner, and I can walk to St. Aidan's from my house. And around the corner was the theater where I saw Jaws. An Orca. And I don't go in the ocean because of those two movies.
Likewise. Hey, we have that in common, man.
Yeah, buddy.
Well, brother, I appreciate your time, Borga. Thank
of course,
you
bro.
So much, man. When I saw that you were going to put out this podcast, I reached out to Lisa. I was like, this guy, we gotta help him promote it, man. Anything we could do, man, just ask.
And vice versa. You know, I mean, once I get to rock star status with the podcast, just kidding.
Yeah, remember now, us.
Of course. Listen, Lisa, I wasn't joking about hiring you to do social. So you, let's talk.
Okay.
You know, you got my email address.
You have her email.
Yep.
But brother, so, have a great day, man. It was good talking to you.
Thank you guys very much. I appreciate
thank
everything.
You so much.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Uh-huh.
All right. Bye.
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 Right on. Daniel O'Neill, better known as Borga. Make sure you check out his podcast, Rockstar Roadie Podcast. He has a Facebook page. He'll be doing these live. February 6th is his first episode. He'll have Hoogie, bass tech for Shinedown. They're going to, they're going to entertain you. Let's just leave it at that. They're going to entertain you and educate you on some shit. While you're online, finding his Facebook page, go to isbreakfast.com. Check out the page. Check out our YouTube channel. Check out our store. Buy something. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe on the YouTube channel and our podcast page. That'd be great. All right, guys, I'm done. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.